It's the official catch-up podcast, and we are back. I bet you never thought you'd hear that. We were finished up at the end of the season there, and we're back with, what is, Chris, I believe, the fifth season of the official catch-up podcast. How are you doing?
Yeah, good. Can't believe it's almost been 5 years. It's probably one of the longest things that I've went on in my life, to be honest. So, quite an achievement for myself, I guess, and obviously everyone that's been involved, Mozza, Sean, obviously yourself as well. So it's been good. It's obviously evolved over the last few years. I've had a couple of tough spells, obviously, with COVID and everything that's went on negatively in Scottish football. But it's always good to just talk about football. And I think we achieved that mostly last season. So that was pretty decent. And we were on a wee bit of a decent run as well with episodes as well, Ben. So pretty good.
I guess our predictions were a bit shit, but apart from that, we were on the ball when it came to the actual football and what was going on. And that's what we do here at the official catch-up. We do try to keep you well informed about what's going on what we'd say both sides of debates. We also try to keep you updated with football and the games, the results, and all the good stuff that happens in the game. I'm sure there's plenty to talk about. There'll be plenty that we have missed over the course of the last few months. And Lone League season starts this weekend. I actually didn't realise it would start this weekend. I assumed it was the same weekend as the West Scotland, and which is next weekend, and therefore it was caught a little bit off guard when I seen some stuff online on, I think it was Monday night. I quickly scrambled round to you to say, hey, when are we going to do this podcast to get it back going? And we're recording on a Wednesday afternoon. I've chucked work early and all sorts to come and do this, so that's how dedicated I am to the cause right now to come and get the official catch-up back on the road for season 23-24. So, Chris, where will we start? There's probably loads happened, as I say. Where do you think is the best place to start?
Let's probably get the negativity out the way. Obviously, we kind of knew about this. We'd heard about this. I think it kind of, I don't know if it intertwined with the Conference League, but a lot of people are thinking that. Obviously, the SFA licence criteria is going to be changing for SPFL teams to bronze, which isn't really great for, obviously, Tier 5 teams. Cumbernauld Colts being the only club in the Lowland and Highland Leagues that have a bronze licence. I guess the big thing is doctors. Obviously, a lot of clubs need a doctor to get the entry to go to bronze for the, I think that comes into like the first team category. There's like three different categories. Four if you include the UEFA thing, but obviously that's only for likes of Celtic and Rangers. There's ground, I think first team, and I think the youth clubs as well. So they're judged under three different categories if they obviously don't want the UEFA license, which obviously the likes of, you know, Cumbernauld Colts don't need the UEFA license because they're not going to be playing in the, you know, the Europa League or the Champions League. So one thing that I've always been confused at, Ben, is why, if you look at a club like Stirling Uni, who share the same ground as Stirling Albion, obviously Forth Bank, how come Stirling Albion get a bronze for their ground and Stirling Uni only get entry? It doesn't make much sense to me. And it's the same with Falkirk and East Stirlingshire, who share the same facilities. I mean, Falkirk are on a silver and, East Stirlingshire are only entry. And a lot of people will say, well, oh, they have to be entry throughout because, you know, to get the entry license, basically. But it's not true because obviously Cowden Beef are bronze for some things, but only still have an entry. So yeah, that kind of confuses me, and it shows a wee bit of inconsistency with, in my opinion, the licensing criteria. But I mean, the big takeaway is obviously it's going to be tough for teams to get a bronze license, considering there's a lot of SPFL clubs that don't have a bronze license. I believe they have a year to get that sorted. You know, it's something the SPFL clubs voted in. Kelty Hearts, Bonnie Rigrose, Edinburgh City, Cove Rangers, among the former non-league sides that still are only on entry licence. So it's interesting. I mean, what are your overall thoughts, Ben, of the whole escapade, I guess?
I think, yeah, from my perspective, I see it, I guess, from two sides. I see it from the trying to be progressive and more professional and all that kind of stuff. So I get the need, perhaps, for the licensing standards to be raised. I think it just has to be done in the right manner, which I don't think, for me, these changes are. I think you mentioned the grounds there. That's obviously one part of it, and then there's the kind of off the field type situations around personnel and policies and all that they've got to have in place, which I think, talking about the point you raised there about the ground, I think that's possibly part of it why they're different. I think it's because it's to do with things like how you use the ground, for example, on a match day and what facilities you have available. It might be that there are certain facilities available to some teams, but for example, Cambernauld might only have access to certain parts of the ground, therefore the whole ground itself isn't actually the silver or whatever it is for that Clyde would have had when they were there, because the usage of the ground is slightly different on the match day. I think that's probably why that happens. I don't know that for sure, but I would assume that there's probably something around that.
I'd be asking the question if I was these clubs.
I think that's the important bit. I think you've got to be quite transparent with the teams and to see why we're doing it. And yes, great to have clubs progress and improve and it drives the standards forward. But I think it just, for me, feels a bit more like a more of a gatekeeping of the pyramid again. I feel there's a kind of blocker put in place there for teams who want to progress. There'll be teams in the Lowland League, like we mentioned, there's only one as it stands that we believe to have a ground that's capable of meeting the bronze requirements. Now, the personnel thing, that's probably a bit more difficult. You mentioned the doctors. You're probably going to have to go and get a club doctor to hit the bronze level, which, I mean, let's be honest, doctors are obviously under pressure as it is in the NHS and what have you. And the ones who probably work privately are going to command a high amount of money to come and do a job on a Saturday at a football game, because they could probably go and get a shift in a clinic somewhere earning hundreds and hundreds of pounds per day. And someone's wanting someone to come and do cover a football game for a few hours or cover training. I don't know how much you need a doctor, for example, in place. But I think you, for that one specifically, I think you need to find some sort of common ground. And you see maybe in some other sports where you kind of use shared kind of facilities, if you like, or shared kind of practices around things like doctors and medical staff. And maybe that's what we need to go down that route, rather than this requirement that clubs have to have a physio, they have to have a doctor, they have to have this, they have to have that. Then maybe it needs to be found a way to balance that. In terms of the grounds, I mean, there's going to maybe money spent for the likes of, we're probably looking at progressive clubs within the Lowland League. You're talking about your Trinents, your East Kilbrides, Berwick Rangers, East Stirlingshire, the teams that probably want to get into the leagues. I'm not saying that not every team wants to, but that's just some examples of teams that you would think that want to get up the leagues or get back into leagues. In the case of the likes of Berwick and Shire, that they're going to obviously spend a bit of money and probably upgrading the ground, which comes at obviously a cost. They've probably already done for some of these teams. I think you probably look at East Kilbride, a team that are probably in a fortunate position, you'd say, that they have probably a bit more money to spend and able to do that. Trinent, I'm not too sure about their financial states. Berwick and Shire and others, I'm not too sure where they'd be at. But if the goalposts have changed in terms of what you require to hit, then that's kind of what's going to need to happen for those clubs, which is a bit unfortunate. And again, going deeper down the pyramid, it's going to be the same for your Darvels, Pollocks, Clydebank, over on the other side, Salkey, Pennycook, all these kind of teams that want to do well, then they're going to need to probably spend a bit more dough to get in that position.
East Kilbride are an interesting one for me, because obviously the plan is, if they ever get up to the SPFL, to build a new ground, to build a new stadium, a new facility. I mean, it would be a bit of a pain for them to have to renovate the current K Park and then obviously move out and then create a new state, spending money where it's probably not needed. I mean, I doubt a new facility or a new stadium is going to be up in a year, depending on how much grace time they get. I think there is a grace time for Tier 5 clubs, whether it's this season or two seasons. It's not very clear at this current stage. In terms of the League 2 playoffs at the end of the season, I'm not sure. I mean, we talked about wafers with Thomas Brown. I'm sure that kind of thing would happen with SPFL clubs. But how long do you give them? Do you give them this season? Do they know, obviously they know about it now, that they have to have certain things by the time the playoff comes? Do these do they have to go up to bronze? I mean, a lot. The funny thing is about the whole license criteria is some teams will be getting their review now. You know what I mean? I mean, it happens throughout the year. So if they, you know, if they had the review already and then it comes to playoff time and they're still on an entry license, then they've got no chance, really, have they? So, I mean, it's probably one of those that we'll wait until, what, March next year and find out what's going to happen with it. So, but, yeah, it's a complete farce in terms of the doctors. If you look at the whole, the guidebook and criteria, I mean, there's a lot to it. Even physios have to have certain things trained in terms of the SFA, the first aid, this, that, and the next thing, which is, I mean, we're talking about improving standards, it's fine, but we have to make them realistic. And the doctor thing is really unfeasible for a lot of clubs, in my opinion, because, I mean, it's hard for clubs to even get physios now. And I think I only know of a handful of clubs that actually have club doctors. So it's not the easiest of tasks to get that. And you certainly need that for going from entry to at least, you know, minimum bronze. So it's going to be difficult, I think.
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to the doctor scenario, I think you've got to be lucky that you maybe got a fan within your club or somebody that's been involved for a number of years that wants to do that. I think you'd probably look at
Sam Miller
isn't it? A good example at EK, who has been involved and has helps out East Kilbride, probably doesn't do it, I assume, for the money, does it for the love of the game, and been involved in a club, I assume local to himself, and you see there's not many like folk like that around. And I think again the physio thing is definitely a key issue. We at Connor Rangers had that problem recently, is you firstly trying to get a physio that has the right qualifications and trying to understand what's expected as well. I think there's quite a strict requirement in terms of first aid kind of qualifications and stuff like that. For
you have to be members of certain organisations and whatever else,
I think the one that sticks out to me the most is that there's a requirement there to have like the Hampden Sports Clinic first aid certificate, for example, the Scottish Rugby one, or there's like another English FA one that you can have. So there's three you can have. And if you've went to uni and done a master's, for example, in sports therapy, you might not actually be qualified because you haven't done that first aid certificate. Whereas you might have, say, a wealth of experience and knowledge and know how to treat players in emergency situations, I'm sure, but because you don't have a badge that says it and you have a kind of more detailed qualification, but it's on a kind of a slightly broader spec in the sense of it's a degree rather than a specific course. It's like me and my day job. I mean, I've got wealth of experience in what I do, but there's some jobs I can't go for because I haven't qualified in a certain 8-hour course or 12-hour course. It's not right. I don't think it's right. And sometimes you have to get exemptions and things like that from the kind of chief medical officer at SFA and things like that to do that. We've managed to do that this time round, and we've got a physio in the club, but the time we took to try and get the right person in the door who had that qualification, it's tough, and teams will find that, I think, across the board, because again, it's the same scenario around the money. Physios can get money earning good dough at a clinic, or maybe run their own business, for example, doing sports therapy, and they're just very hard to come by, and that's the thing that I think that maybe there needs to be a kind of some sort of common ground found around, maybe like some sort of compromise that says you have like that shared kind of shared resource, if you like, that is put in for match days and stuff like that, just to make sure that the players are safe, which is obviously that's the important bit around having doctors and having physios and stuff like that. But certainly it doesn't feel like it's something that's going to be easy for a lot of teams.
Yeah. I think we've probably talked enough on the license, but we'll get the negativity thing out the way, you know, since it's just started this season, obviously. One thing that's came up, it always happens in Scottish football, and it's always something that we have to address and put our own opinion on, sometimes, Ben.
On to the football then. The football starts on Friday night, Hearts B versus Gretna at Ainslie Park, and there'll be a full card. This is starts Friday with games on Saturdays: Bone Etchington versus Galway, Dean Rovers, Cali Braves versus Berwick Rangers, Cumberland Colts versus Celtic B, East Kilbride versus Broomhill, East Stirlingshire versus Trenent, Edinburgh Uni versus Civil Service Strollers, Linlithgow Rose versus University of Stirling. That's the card as it stands. Where will we start, Chris? Let's start at the top then. Let's look at the teams that we think will be challenging at the top of the division this year. I think we'll get it out of the way early. Let's go straight to everyone's talking about East Kilbride. Mick Kennedy's in charge there. Si Ferry's the assistant manager. It's all talk at East Kilbride, and they've made a whole new raft of signings across the board. I've lost track of the amount of players they've brought in at this point in time. It's like 15, 16 new players. Obviously, a number of those guys coming in from Darvel, who were under Mick there in the West Scotland Premier Division. But all new faces at East Kilbride, Chris. What do you think?
Yeah, obviously they're going to challenge. It's clear to everyone. I think a lot of East Kilbride fans might feel a wee bit relieved the fact that I'm not going to put the catch-up curse on them, because I don't believe they're favourites for me. There's another team in the contention that I believe possibly could pip them. And it's probably a shock, and I'm not just saying this. If East Kilbride then go on to win the league this season and I've not put the curse on them, then maybe it was a real thing. But look, I respect Mick, I respect Si, and I think they have a really good team. But there's other clubs in the league that I think are just pep them for me for different reasons, which we'll discuss when we get to the clubs. But I mean, East Kilbride are a solid outfit. We all know that their objective is to get to the SPFL. I kind of mentioned it earlier. Obviously, they want to build a new facility, a new stadium. I heard somewhere, obviously, I think they're the biggest town in Scotland that doesn't have a team in the SPFL or something like that. So, I mean, they have a makings of a great outfit there. I think the attendances are doing a wee bit better. I noticed something about the highest number selling season tickets or something today. So it's looking great. And obviously there's a lot of positivity around East Kilbride. But look, there's been positivity around East Kilbride the last few seasons. And it's not panned out. And I have a worry it might be that way again. I don't have anything to back that up really at the moment. Certainly because I do rate their team. But I'll wait and see with that one. What are your thoughts? Are they your favourites, Ben?
I think you've got to look at
it. Surely not. Surely you're going to go East Kilbride. We can't both go East Kilbride.
You've got to look at their squad on paper and think that squad is too strong for this division. I think that's the thing that sticks out for me. You look at the guys they have brought in. I mean, guys that are playing League One, Championship, League Two over the last couple of years, as well as playing. And top players as well coming in from the West of Scotland. You look at them bringing in like Keir Sampson, Chris Truesdale, Chris McGowan, Cam Eady, even Ryan Lochie, left back, guys in again, playing up the Championship, Liam Brown, who was at Queen's Park just last season. Ali Roy played over in the Northern Irish Premiership as well. He's been around the Scottish game a fair bit too. Callum Tappan, League One. Strong players coming out that side, and there's probably guys that we don't even know of or can think of now. Think of guys like Johnny Lyon, who was at Pollock, good players that maybe went under the radar a little bit and who'll do well for East Kilbride. I have no doubt about it. So I think for me, like, as much as people worry about the catch-up costs, I think they're going to be more than capable of winning the league, and I don't see, for me, how that won't happen. It'll take something, I think, pretty impressive to beat East Kilbride based on that squad. I think we know now that Mick's a capable manager in this level of football, and bringing in the experience of Si Ferry. I'm sure we'll talk about Broomhill at some point and that experience, but I think Si, you can tell, is a good coach and he's very capable on the training field, and bringing his expertise to the game, I think will be good for East Kilbride. And as I say, there's loads of good players in that squad that are going to be more than capable. So I think for me, I haven't seen anything else from any other squads personally that I think are good enough to win the league. So I'm going to go East Kilbride. I'm going to be just getting there early and stay it. I think it's got to be East Kilbride for me. I think I know where you're probably going with one of the clubs or some of the clubs that you're referring to, but certainly we'll get there just shortly. But I think East Kilbride are going to be very, very strong. If they don't
does
win it,
work, does it work with you if it's the catch-up curse? That's what
maybe not. It could just be you. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. We'll find out. I might be the blessing. Maybe I'm a good a good
thing. We'll never know because you went with Scott Bride now, Ben. We'll never know if it was a real thing or not.
No, that's it. But I think for me, they're going to be good. As I say, I'm not sure about any of our squads in the division that are going to be able to beat them. So, beat them certainly in games. I'm sure they will. But I think over the course of the season, East Kilbride more than capable of winning that.
Interesting.
Well, move on to some of the other teams then, Chris. You mentioned that you think you've got someone else in. Let's find out who that other team might be and who do you think can challenge East Kilbride for the title?
Trinent. And I'll tell you why, Trinent, because they've kind of went for a Kelty Hearts, Bonnie Rigg Rose hybrid, who they brought in, obviously, Dean Brett, Alan Horn, Callum Higginbottom. These are guys that have done it. They've already won the league, you know, previously with other clubs. What was interesting for me was, I'm sure we'll talk about the last open goal Broomhill episode, but Si said something about Trinent being animals. They're animals. And that mentality of Trinent has not changed. And I think that gives them a bit of an edge. And I said towards the end of last year, I think I kept on commenting that I felt that Trinent were playing a wee bit like Bonnie Rigg, obviously under a different manager. Obviously it was Colin Nish, but the way they defended, they started feeling a wee bit like Bonnie Rigg. And the fact that they've now got Dean Brett and Alan Horn and these guys coming in, I think it will make them a tough team to beat. Obviously only pre-season, but they beat a fairly capable Talbot side at the weekend. I think it was at the weekend 3-1. So the pre-season results have been, I think, fairly decent for them. You know, with all due respect to the guys that they brought in, they already have a solid squad. I think the big question mark of Trinent is, we're talking about these players having won the Lone League previously. Obviously, that was a couple of seasons ago. They have aged, in fairness. They're a few years older. Max Christie, a manager that I always find demands a lot of his players. It can be quite an intense type guy. I think I've mentioned that about Max a few times. It's whether the players react to that, because I know there is some players that you know probably don't like that type of management. Max to me has always been a kind of old school proper, I guess what you would say, as a junior manager. With all due respect to Max, I mean he's old school. He has won, obviously. You know, he knows success, and to me it's clear that Trinent are going for this league title this season for who they've signed. And I'm really impressed with them, and I think they will push, and I think if they're my favourite, certainly East Kilbride are close. I think it's going to be between them two, in my opinion. I don't think there'll be much in it, but it's for whatever reason it's sticking in my head what Si said about Trinent being animals. East Kilbride certainly have those type of players. But I think Trinent might win that physical, what do we call it, streetwise type battle in games. But we'll wait and see. It's early predictions. One thing I do think East Kilbride have over Dwell is possibly the depth, which is no shock. Obviously, Darrell had depth previously under Mick. So if there is an injury at Trinent or suspensions or whatever, they might have an edge there. But yeah, it's going to be, I think, similar to last season, we're probably not going to have one team, you know, dominating. You know, it wasn't until the very last few weeks of the season that Spartans kind of ran away with it. So it's exciting, really exciting league this year. But yeah, definitely between Trinent and East Kilbride, in my opinion.
Is there any team you think they can maybe be a bit of a surprise package this season?
I'll get a stick if I don't say Berwick Rangers, because, you know, they done really well last season. And I was probably a wee bit unfair on them because I said something about them only turning up after Christmas. I think that didn't really happen last year. They kind of had a middle period because they actually started the season quite well. They had a middle period where it kind of sort of deflated them and they kind of fell away. The problem with Berwick Rangers is consistency. They have to be consistent. Obviously, having Liam Buchanan scoring, you know, 20, I think 21 or 22 goals last season, being the top scorer, really helped them. I mean, with all due respect to Liam, he's getting on in years, and it was quite an accomplishment. Whether he can do that again this season, It'd be remarkable if he, you know, hit the high figures of 20 plus. So, Berwick have a chance. I do rate them, but yeah, the last couple of seasons they've went on these really good runs, but it's always been towards. It's always been when the pressure's off, when they've not had anything to play for. In fairness, and maybe that's what it's been. Maybe they've not had, you know, they've probably had expectations. They've not met them expectations, and then the pressure's off. So we need to see how they deal with actually possibly being a challenger.
Well, that's where we can, I think, from a challenging perspective at the top end of the division. Let's go right to the bottom of the division then, Chris. Who do we think will be relegation candidates this year?
I feel like I always kind of pick on them, but Edinburgh Uni, there's so much uncertainty there. Sean McCauley, obviously the former Bonnyrigg first team coach, has taken over from Dorian Agunro. New regime, I don't know in terms of their squad. I think hopefully I'll get to the game on Saturday against Strollers, so I can have a wee check to see if there's any of the old faces still at Edinburgh Uni, but it's going to be a massive challenge for that job. Dorian probably didn't get the credit he deserved for keeping Edinburgh in the league for so long. They're the biggest unknown for me. I mean, they could have a really good intake and players coming in that are decent, but it's so much of an unknown. And if you think how strong teams have, with the signings they've made, even the sort of the lower clubs, the sort of bottom half clubs, I think it's going to be a struggle for Edinburgh Uni. But it's also, I'm very wary, it's a wee bit unfair to say that, not knowing who they've retained or what players they have. I mean, there was guys like, obviously, Ennis Lawson that went there a few seasons ago, who was a bit of a gem, obviously had the pro youth experience with Hibs. So, I mean, if they sign players like that and they can get guys in like that and do well, they might have a chance. But certainly Edinburgh Uni, for me, I kind of worry about it at the moment. What about you, Ben? I think you've got probably certain clubs in your mind.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, I mentioned them last year and they got by with Gretna. I think still, for me, I've not seen radical improvement from Gretna's in terms of the recruitment this year. I think they've brought in a lot of guys from WBT Star who obviously got relegated last year. It's not nothing against Gretna per se as a club, but I got time for the club themselves. But I just think on the park, I don't think they're quite there, and they're going to be, again, towards the bottom. I think it's going to be a difficult season for them and their fans. I think that one unload you mentioned there about Edinburgh Uni is the one thing we probably think about, is that while Edinburgh Uni are still in the division, then you're probably thinking to yourself, you've got a chance to stay up. You've only got to beat Edinburgh Uni, and that's probably what Gretna will be looking at, to be honest, this year. I think they've got to maybe try and regroup and rebuild. And they've brought in some guys, if you look at their squad, they've brought in some guys that have kind of Queen of the South kind of youth players and Carlisle youth players, which might be good players. We don't know an awful lot about them. But I think for me, yeah, the recruitment, from what I do know and what I have seen, I'm not seeing anything that jumps out is like they'll make a big difference to the squad that they had last year. So yeah, I'm going to probably go for getting, as much as people will probably be disappointed about that, but that's kind of where I see it just now. And I hope they prove me wrong. I think that's the important thing here. I hope they do prove me wrong and do well, but I don't see it personally.
The issue with Gretna, and I think you hit the nail on the head, there has been a lot of, you know, players move from that relegated Albiti side, which is never a good sign, obviously, if you're signing players from a relegated side. In fairness, it was some of the younger players, plus I think Franny as well, who's a good guy and a great player as well, in fairness to Franny. I think he's injured at the moment, so wish him all the best with his recovery. So, but Gretna, I still have worries about Gretna, and it's mainly because of previous. The last few seasons we've seen maybe a couple of defeats or whatever, and then suddenly players are at the door and they don't really replace them, and then it's an ever-changing squad. One thing I will say, and I said it positively about Brian Gilfillan, is that the players he's brought in, he seems to trust and he seems to know. So hopefully that doesn't happen this season with Gretna, where we will see lots of ins and outs and wondering where this guy's went to and when did they get this guy in, because that's an issue with Gretna. And One player I will highlight is I think they brought in brought back Robbie Iverson, who I've always rated. I've always thought he was a really decent player for Gretna, so a workhorse, and they need that type of player. But it's a lot of younger players. It's a wee bit similar with Albion Rovers. They've kind of chose a sort of younger team, so a wee bit more experience, I would say, in that Gretna side, and a wee bit more experience with Albion Rovers. And I think I would probably rate them a wee bit highly. In fairness to Albion Rovers, I think we saw them in the cup yesterday. I think they've done a decent job against Raith Rovers. Obviously, they got beat 2-0 at the end of the day, but Ross Connolly, everyone was praising him. We know about Ross being, you know, one of the top keepers in the league. Great signing for Albion coming from East Stirlingshire. I don't worry about them, actually. I think I'm completely opposite about them. I think they'll be at least mid-table. I don't think they'll have the season that Ken Beef had. I think they'll actually do all right. The problem with Albion is they're probably a wee bit thin. Obviously, they've made 7 new signings recently, or I think they might have brought another couple. But they're really thin at the moment going into the season. But a couple more signings there, it'll be decent for them. But I rate Albion Rovers' chances better than Ken Beef last year, I would say, at the moment.
I think if you're Albion Rovers, you've got to take a look at it. It's that rebuild, reset, whatever you want to call it, transition.
Revival, they're calling it. Rovers
Revival. Rovers Revival. I like it. I like that station. I think that's what you've got to look at it and just be realistic. I think like that's important. You, when you do go down, you've got to take your medicine and try and take it maybe as positively as you can and maybe improve the club off the park. I think you've seen that with Berwick Rangers, for example. They've done a lot of good stuff off the park in the last couple of years, obviously haven't maybe challenged or anything like this so far on the park, but they've improved the club, and I think that's something you've maybe got to do when you're a team like Albion. Obviously probably rested on the laurels for a number of years up in the leagues, and that's what they'll need to do, and then they can eventually get it right off the park and be ready to go and get promoted at some point and the near future. I guess we're not going to get into in any great detail about the promotion, relegation and the pyramid, but this is the times when you look at a club like Albion Rovers, who will know now that it's going to be really difficult to get back up because of that, the situation with the promotion relegation out of the Lone League and the Highland League, that to get back into League 2, you've got to go and smash the division you're in and then win the playoff to get into the playoff to play Club 42, which becomes another game. So you've kind of making your own rod for your own back, really, I think, with how that's set up. And that's what they'll just need to go away and do and bide their time. And the division's not going to get any easier. I think that's the other thing you think about with the promotion. It's still not ideal at the bottom end in terms of promoted clubs coming through. I think we had a bit of a glimmer maybe around the conference leagues, but that's obviously been shelved now, so there'll not be a kind of increased promotion relegation for clubs next season, which is what it is. Until that's resolved, then we're going to be in the same spot. But teams like, Albion, have got to just think about it and go for it, maybe not this year, but the following year, the year after, and bounce back, hopefully, for them. You mentioned Cowden Beef there. I think, again, I don't see an awful lot from them personally that jumps out as being they're going to be in a great shakes in the division this year at all. I think probably, again, towards the bottom, I haven't seen an awful lot that I'm impressed by with them. And I think it'll be interesting to see how it shapes up, because I think we always talked about that kind of, I think we referred to it as the kind of meh category before in the podcast. It was kind of that, kind of what, 17th to about fourth, fifth, I think it was, maybe a sixth, I can't remember, but it was kind of that bracket in the middle that of the kind of unknown, not really going to challenge for anything. Cowden Beef are probably going to be in that kind of bracket again, I think, for me. I don't think they're going to be probably towards the bottom too, so they maybe want to look at cups and go on a cup run perhaps and try and get a bit of buzz back around Cowden Beef.
Speaking of cups, obviously a wee bit controversial that they got an invite to the Vial Play Cup. I mean, they were 15th in the league last season. I think the reason given by the SFA was, oh, they were the last team relegated, other than obviously Albion Rovers, who were already in it. But so I mean, that's a change from the last couple of seasons. Obviously, it's been a split between the runners up of the the Lone League and the runners up of the Highland League. So if we were looking at this year, Stirling Uni should have been in it. But the issue, I think, maybe makes it a wee bit unfair is the fact that 20 grand minimum, I think, for Kind Beef, and that's probably allowed them to strengthen their team with that money. You know, you saw a couple of guys going from Open Goal Broomhill to Kind Beef. You know, a few guys going from the Cali Braves, and then now they've signed up with Doogie Hill and Andy Rodden, really good players. So Kind Beef look like they've benefited from that money, which is fair enough. But it does, you've got to think of other teams. You've got to maybe think of Stirling Uni and think, well, I mean, not that, I don't know what they could have done with the money, to be fair, but is it unfair for Kind Beef to get that money having finished 15th and they've technically strengthened their side with it, I would assume, and weakened other clubs? So, I mean, if you're Kind Beef, you're not going to be moaning it, getting, you know, minimum 20, 24 grand or something like that. So, but if you're other clubs, you're not going to be happy losing your players to a team that probably wouldn't have got them otherwise.
Yeah, I think for me, I agree. I think it's unfair personally. I think if you are the second place team in the division, as it has been historically, you've got in the Viaplay Cup, and it comes with that reward. It comes with, as you say, the minimum prize money I think you get, plus potentially a big game against a Dundee United.
Two gates as well, two
Aberdeen,
gates, yeah.
Or Hearts, Hibs, Kilmarnock, but some other anyone basically in the SPFL who might bring a decent following to your ground. So, I mean, you're right about, I think, University of Stirling, they obviously don't pay wages to their players, but based on their kind of scholarship kind of university route that they have, and they're obviously able to attract players to their universities on that basis, but they could probably use that money to continue to fund the programme and maybe improve their coaching staff, stuff like that, that all of them might do that, maybe get the club doctor, for example, that we were referring to earlier, that they can maybe don't have. I don't know enough about their setup. I was up there a few weeks back. It's a great place, Stirling Uni, for football, and it must be a great environment for players to play in. And,
yeah.
But I think it's completely unfair. But I mean, fair play to Kind Beef. Not going to go like, sorry guys, I don't want 20 grand. You know what I mean? That if you're invited in, you're invited.
It's just
I think another one of these things in the SPFL. You go that's bullshit. And like, why are you doing that? Like, that's, I think, the thing that we look at the SPFL a lot, and is there's a lot of kind of self-preservation that takes place before they talked about the setup with the license criteria. Just more of that again. The self-preservation society. There's the title of the podcast right there, Chris. Now I think I've got that one locked in the bag. But yeah, it'll be interesting. McCown Beef, as you like we said, I think the one thing they do have in their back pocket is the fact they've got a good manager in Callum Elliott. I think he's a great manager, a great coach at this level. He's only 36. He's got his potential to go to the top, as far as I'm concerned. I've been fortunate enough, I think I've mentioned before, to speak to him on a couple of occasions in football and circles, and he knows the game inside out. He's got, he does this as a job, he's this is his life, and he's probably recruited a lot better than I realised. I think that's one of the other things that's the standout for me.
Yeah,
guys like Matty McDonald and Aidan McLaughlin, they brought in from Broomhill, like you said. That
to me, they were the two best Broomhill players last year.
Yeah, them and probably you'd argue like Brock Watson. He went to Trinidad. I think the three of them, the standout guys for that Broomhill side, and to sign both of them and have them in the middle of park. It's going to be great. They've got guys like Jamie Docherty from East Kilbride, another strong player. Zach Butterworth, you mentioned Cali Braves. He comes in for Cali Braves alongside Jack Duncan, which we know are capable players at this level. And I think Calum can get a tune out of them. If he can get a tune, then they might do well. But I think, yeah, it'll take a bit of time to see where they can go.
I think from my perspective, I think they'll possibly not challenge, but they'll certainly do better than last season. Top half, I would say. At minimum, I think anything lower than that's probably a disappointing season for Kind Beef. But to me, I rate their team much higher than last season, I would say.
Well, now look at the rest of the clubs across the division, and I'll do it in a bit of a random order. This is not by any means anything we'll say is you're going to finish here or there or everywhere, but let's start. We mentioned them earlier on, Stirling Uni, Chris. Lost a number of of their better players over the course of the summer. James Berry, Jason Jarvis, Matty Burrows, Ben Fry, Callum Ray, Ewan McGill, all leaving the club. Standout players, as far as I'm concerned, for University of Stirling. I saw them a few weeks ago. I mean, the squad probably wasn't quite there. It was a mixture, I think, of first and seconds that were playing against us up at Stirling Uni. But I guess it depends what happens. They might recruit some new guys coming in that are maybe a bit younger, coming out of school, maybe been in the pro U setup like they do, and you might get a few hidden gems that appears over the course of the summer.
Yeah, I mean they've still got some guys that are obviously experienced enough, and you know, guys that came in last year, obviously like so Ben Heal, who's, you know, West Ham youth or whatever. So I don't think they'll repeat what they done last year in terms of, you know, where they were in the league. I thought it was a brilliant achievement. They won, obviously, the Easter Scotland Qualifying Cup. They retained the Bucks. They won the Queen Shield and the uni competition as well. I think that was one that Chris eluded Chris for so many years or whatever. So in terms of uni competitions, yeah, I'd expect them still to do well. In terms of the lone league, I think they're maybe going back to being a top half, middle of the run team. But it really depends. I mean, they play so many games, Stirling Uni, I should say, and they're obviously in all these competitions. But one thing they have proven over the last few years is producing players and producing results. No one really called it last year how good they would be. I think they still might shock a few teams this year, but I don't think it'll be to the level it was last year, because some of these players were really peaking, obviously, like James Berry, who was, you know, fantastic. He's now, you know, Stenhouse Muir. A couple of the boys went to Pollock, obviously, in the West. So in terms of the actual, probably mid-table for me, I think, would be successful considering how many guys have lost. But as you, there's probably under-20s guys. We've seen it time and time again with Stirling Uni, some of the under-20 guys coming up and really leaving a mark. And yeah, it's a wait and see with Stirling Uni, but I certainly don't have any worries of them about, you know, being towards the bottom in a relegation fight or whatever, Ben.
Yeah, I seen them a couple of weeks back. We played them in our first friendly this season up at Stirling Uni, and some good players. They look at the guy, Marcus Lavery, looked really good. Ben the Kyver Redwood looked really good. Kieran McInnes, still good players that we know of and I've seen over the last kind of couple of seasons at Stirling Uni. And they can be anything. I think that's the thing we always think about. And they can probably go on a run in the cup as well. I think they've got that in their locker. They can go into like the Scottish Cup and things like that, and the South Challenge Cup, and make a run for it there too. So I think they'll be fine. I think they'll be in that category. I don't think personally agree. I don't think they'll be challenging, but I think they'll be top half easily. Maybe
even
top 6-7 perhaps. So they'll be more than capable and well safe for the. At the bottom end. Next team then I look at will be Cali Braves, Chris. A number of departures over the summer for Cali Braves. A lot of good players going out the door there. It seems like kind of maybe struggling to recruit by the looks of it, based on the numbers are going out and the numbers coming back in.
They got a couple of guys in, noticed it today. Lewis Thompson and a keeper, Kimi, I think. I don't think he'll mind me saying, but I spoke to Chris Ewan recently over something completely different. Still talking football and that, but yeah, it's been tough for them. They've obviously lost Mark Kelly, who was their key man. Luke Main, who had a fantastic season. Scott Forrester, fantastic defender for them. Obviously, Davey Winter's leaving, their assistant manager as well. So it's been a massive change for Cali Braves. Obviously, they're now pushing the fan ownership. Mostly, I guess, Americans have noticed it on a wee Scottish football team, Freedom, and surprised they've not pulled out the shortbread and the tartan yet, but maybe they have.
Maybe they have. Maybe that's part of your member pack. Maybe your member pack is getting a bit of shortbread. I can't iron brew in a Tunnock's tea cake or something.
I like it. I think it's a... Cali Braves, certainly for me, it seemed like they're going on a new approach. I do worry a wee bit about them this season, but I don't think they're relegation candidates. I think they will be possibly bottom half, but I don't think they're going to be, you know, bottom two, three. look, Ricky Waddle's the type of guy that he always brings in players that you probably don't expect. I mean, they got the likes of Zach Butterworth, who was a former Rangers player. I don't know if it was exit trials or whatever, but they seem to make really good pickups. And it's players that you've heard of, but you're not really expecting them to do well, and they do. And that's why a lot of these guys have left Calibraves, because they've actually really developed into good footballers. Have had really good, they've been really good under Ricky, and they've performed. And it won't shock me to see Ricky Waddle do that type of thing with the guys he brings in. But you're right, I think they have a decent base. They've kept a couple of guys like Ross McNeil, Jamie Watson and whatnot. So they still have a base there. It's just adding different pieces here and there. But yeah, I'm not really worried about Braves this season in terms of relegation. I just don't think they're going to do too much in terms of pushing up the league.
I think it was Cole Stiles is retired, is that right?
I think he's a coach at the Braves, if I remember correctly. I think he was doing something for the youth teams. I'm sure he was injured, or he was injured or something like that. But I'm sure he's still under the as a player.
He was a great player, man. He was a really good player. I'm surprised.
I'm sure he had some sort of injury. I'm sure I'll get corrected if I'm wrong. But I'm sure he was coaching the youth sides or whatever.
Yeah, well, best of luck to him, because he is a good player. It's a shame to see him if he's having to retire, because he's probably still quite young, I'd have thought, as well. So, but yeah, all the best to Cole. Moving on then to Broomhill. It's no longer Open Goal Broomhill, and we'll probably do this in two sections. We'll firstly talk about the final episode of the documentary that took place. I think it came out on Monday. We're recording it on Wednesday, so a couple of days ago. Chris, you managed to watch. What was your overriding thoughts of the documentary?
I thought it was good. I thought, for what Open Goal Broomhill were, I don't think I was as critical as you, Ben, in certain respects. I enjoyed it. I thought it's shown a light on this level that's probably never been seen before in terms of behind the scenes, fly on the wall type stuff. I tweeted a very, it's probably infamous now, thing about Kirk Broadfoot, because he had mentioned something about drinking on the buses and blah, blah, blah. They showed that part in the documentary again, in the last episode, and there's guys, a bottle of Corona or whatever it was on the bus from Bucky, I think, in the Scottish Cup. And Broadfoot is in the bloody back, and he's smiling away and having a good time and whatever. So I don't think he was drinking, obviously, but that tweet got, 400,000 impressions or whatever all over football. So, I just thought that was funny looking back. But good luck to brothers at Greenock Martin and that. A lot of people were saying that they thought he was going west of Scotland and he moved back to the Championship. But in terms of what was said in the documentary, I think we've always had minor disagreements with the approach Si has taken. I don't think he was used to being a manager in terms of this level, in terms of going out and inquiring about players and, having to deal with the admin side. I think Si very much wanted to focus on the football, and at this level, it's not always possible. He mentioned something about, obviously, Broomhill having only John and George Fraser as the sort of committee, if you will. And I know clubs, obviously, he mentioned Spartans that have different guys doing different, the club treasurer, the committee, the chairman, which is a fair point. But I do feel that Si was, he didn't say it, but I do feel he was kind of burying the Broomhill people, which is, I don't appreciate. But he never said as much, but you could kind of tell it was going in that direction. But that was just my point of view on it. I don't know if you got the same feeling, Ben, about Jenky was burying the Broomhill, to George and John, I guess.
I mean, I think, firstly, I gave you a comment about the whole documentary series. I think it was great to see that and see the kind of inside workings of the football club and how it all panned out. And I think for me, it felt like there was a lot of kind of, I'm not trying to make excuses, but, and then it was kind of like followed by kind of excuses as why maybe things weren't going right. And it, one of those things was about the kind of that admin side, the kind of things that you had to do in the background. Now, people at this level don't get paid any money to do to do an awful lot of this work. We do it for the love of the game, and we don't do it for a job. We do it probably alongside full-time jobs for most people. There'll be some clubs that will have people that maybe are retired and are doing that as a bit of a passion project. But I think that's the thing that stood out for me a lot, was the fact that there was a lot of kind of trying to expose the other issues, and that was always going to happen when you come into a new environment that wasn't your own. That doesn't shock me that's happened, that you maybe used to. You see, Si's worked at a level for a number of years at Peterhead, which obviously is set up completely differently, and they've got the people. He was also assistant manager at Peterhead, which would have been a different role to what he'd have been in at Broomhill. And I think, yeah, it felt like there was a lot of save face in that episode, I think, was the thing that stood out for me. And I get, like, I feel for him as a person. I think that it obviously was very difficult and tough when you listen to his wife and stuff like that talking. I think that obviously has its toll on everyone. I've probably been there myself in the last few months, where you look at it and you wonder, is it worth it? Was it worth the hassle? Because you maybe don't feel like you're enjoying it. You don't feel like it's conducive to a good environment for yourself. So I totally get it from that side. But I think they could have been a bit more fairer, because I think the thing for me, if those problems that they were talking about were so bad, they surely should have been able to bring in more people. They had the facilities, whether that be financially or from a kind of the allure of working for Open Goal. You've seen it with the guy who did the match announcements. He just kind of sent an email in and said, "Oh, can I do this?" And they were like, "Yeah, come on board." So people would have wanted to work for Broomhill and support them, and if they wanted to make it a success, I think they could have. And I think that's the bit that stands out. There was a lot of trying to, at this point, point some fingers. There's a lot of things that are said about comments online. There's a lot of reading into that, which is fair enough. But there seems to be a lot of that.
The dream, I think we mentioned in the podcast before. Is that your saying?
Yeah, I mean, I said that.
That came from you.
I think I personally feel like that was that's maybe what it looked like, but that's the thing. I think there's a lot of that people, that's the outsider's view, and people are allowed to have those opinions, and that's just the way it looked to me. Is that maybe some players, maybe not all players, but you look at some of the players that came down to the division. I think you mentioned Cut Broadfoot as an example of a player who could have been playing top end championship last season, but chose for a reason to come to Broomhill, and he's the one guy that then comes out and complains about it after a year. What the fuck did he expect? Is what I like.
Oh, Jesus.
Like, do you know what I mean? Like, what genuinely he was coming from? We'll talk about Kyle Lafferty probably next week on the podcast when we do our West of Scotland and East of Scotland, but it's a similar kind of thing. These guys have got to be prepared to realise that the level is completely different in many aspects, and this is probably the culture shock they've got. Now, for me, I hope it goes well for Si and Mick at East Kilbride, because I think he is a good, I think I said earlier on, he's a good coach.
He's a good coach, yeah.
He looks very good. I've heard a lot of good stuff about his training and things like that, the sessions are good. He's a good character. He always comes across as a guy that's probably well liked in the dressing room and one of your mates, and in that kind of environment, which can be good for a team. And you can have the manager who's a bit more kind of on the serious side, and that the assistant manager can act as the kind of the go between the players and the manager. And that's exactly probably what Mick will need by his side, is somebody with the experience, but can get on that level and support the players. So I hope it works out well for them. But in terms of Broomhill now, they move forward. They've now got Stephen Swift's come in back in charge at Broomhill, a club he'll know very well. He's had some kind of relative success with Broomhill and got his move to Stenny. Obviously, it didn't work out for him at Stenny. Went to Clyde. He's now back at Broomhill, and he's went about his business quite well, I think, in terms of recruitment. He's brought in some kind of younger, hungrier players that look capable. He's got a couple of guys in that are a bit more experienced than Martin Green and Ross Smith, former captain of the club too, who, if he's kind of by any sort of kind of injury niggles and things like that, will be a major asset to Broomhill. And I think with the other guys they've brought in, you look at Dan Higgins and Ali McComb, Luke Scullion, decent players that have came in at the side, and they'll be more than capable. Will they win the league? I personally don't think so, but I think they'll be more than capable and well up there.
Yeah, I was kind of shocked that everyone thought they were going to be kind of bottom half. I mean, it's just probably unheard of under Swift, even despite what type of Broomhill team they have. One thing you've got to remember that there's less pressure for Broomhill now. I mean, so I had loads and loads of pressure last year because of the documentary, because of the expectations he put on himself, I guess, and the team. I mean, he was telling lads, obviously, we're the best team in the league, and we've got the best players, and these guys can be playing fucking championship level and all that sort of stuff. Again, you know, it was probably a wee bit over the top, but I get what he was doing. He was trying to build the boys' confidence, but I think that can be a bit of a dangerous thing too. I mean, how many of the younger players stepped up the levels? None. I think most of them stayed in the lower league or went even playing in the west of Scotland. So I think you've got to be careful with that. I totally get what he was saying, obviously, and it kind of goes back to what Kirk Broadfoot said about, you know, being a wee bit more professional or whatever. But I guess it comes into the selling the dream thing, Ben. You know what I mean? You have to be realistic and push the guys maybe a wee bit. You don't push them to the moon and say, oh, you're going to be playing for, you know, the championship levels or whatever. I mean, that was mental for me. So that was one criticism of Si, I guess. But I do like Si, I must admit. I think him and Mick are going to be a really good partnership. But in terms of the, you know, a lot of people are sort of maybe forgetting about the Broomhill partnership, Swifty with Craig McEwen as well. Former Darvel coach, assistant manager at Darvel, actually. So, I mean, that's equally as good in terms of experience and whatever else. So, I think Broomhill will be fine. I'm a bit shocked that people thought they were going to be bottom half, I guess.
Yeah, I think for me they'll be up there. I don't think in the first season under Swifty they're going to go and win.
No, no.
But they're building a squad there, and then you look at the guys they have brought in. They'll build on that next season, the season after, and they'll eventually, I assume it's going to go well, and I hope it does. And it's one of those, I think they'll be more than capable. Again, they've seen some success in cup competitions and going on runs. And remember, they played that game against Hibs a few years back in the Scottish Cup. There's that potential there for them too. And I think, you see, Swifty's a good manager, a good coach. He's going to be more than capable. You mentioned Craig McEwen. He's probably a manager in his own right as well.
Yeah.
He could easily have been probably a target for some of the jobs that came up in the summer. You look at the Cumnock job. He's been at St Caddox, but I think
Glen Afton was a success for him. Yeah.
Yeah, he's been around the block. He's knows this level of football well, and maybe the Lowlands probably a new kind of entity for him, but he'll be an asset to that club, no doubt about it. So Broomhill for me, say more than capable, being up that kind of top half towards the top end of the division. Next team, then we're going to get a few more to cover off. Bowness United, Chris.
I was really worried about Bowness, I must admit. With all due respect to the guys that re-signed, including my good mate Kieran McCauley, obviously. I was worried about them. Obviously, they were a wee bit like Pennycook, who we'll talk about in terms of managers. They kind of hired, you know, they lost Max Christie to Trenent, then they hired Ian Little, who then went to Trenent with Max Christie, and it wasn't looking great for them in terms of when, I think a lot of teams were announcing signings really early, and then you're looking at Bowness and all quiet on Bowness, and then suddenly they announced Stuart Hunter, who was basically a club legend as a player, and then that's when they started signing players. And by the way, I've been really impressed with their signings. Do I think they could surprise a few? I do. There's one player in particular that I think will do pretty well. That was a boy that was on loan at Broomhill last season, which was obviously Finn Malcolm from Falkirk. And you look at some of their pre-season results, they played Crossgates recently and won 7-1. I think they're a team. I don't want to say they'll challenge, because that would be a lot of pressure and a lot of expectation on them. But I honestly think they will be at least top half, because for the guys they've brought in, it's sometimes difficult because obviously it's a new manager as well, Stuart Hunter having his first gig in management. But I think Bowness could have a really decent season, considering who they've signed, and the young forward obviously being been a goal scorer, and he's proved it in the league. I think he got 4 in 7 appearances for a short stint at Broomhill, and if he gets that type of return, sometimes for teams like that, it makes the difference having a goal scorer, a top keeper. We've saw obviously with Ross Connolly as well, so it's going to be interesting for Bowness, but I wouldn't say they're a dark horse for the title or anything like that, but I do think they will surprise a few teams this season.
Next team then to look at, Civil Service Strollers, Chris. Probably again in that kind of mid-table bracket, I think they're probably going to be just fine in terms of they're not going to be going down. I don't think they're going to be challenging, but they'll be in that middle pack for sure.
Civil are always a weird one for me because I don't think individually they always have the best team, but they have the best unit or one of the best units. Apart from maybe the guys like Ennis Lawson and obviously a big Alu Faye before he went to Bonnyrigg. I'm not saying that there's no standouts in that team, but they play better as a unit, and I think sometimes that helps them. I mean, people have probably been looking at Strollers for the last few years and thinking that they're going to falter, they're going to be dropping out the top half, and it's not happened, and it's down to the team. It's down to how Gary Jordan gets them to play. They make it very difficult in terms of going to Christy Gillis Park, and kind of want to say they'll do the same this season, but I think they need to sign a few more players for that. Obviously, Mark McConnell going back to club, kind of club legend, if you will, going back as well helps. But I do think they need a couple more bodies in. But I have no worries about Civil, really.
Next team to look at then, East Stirlingshire, Chris. I think made a number of signings. New managers came in as well. They'll be well. I think they'll be up towards the top end.
Yeah, it's a strange one. With all due respect to Pat, I wasn't overly convinced by his appointment to begin with, just because he's quite young in his career, in his management career. I thought they might have went kind of similar to Sandy Clark, got maybe someone more experienced, but it's all positive at the moment. I think I spoke about it on Twitter. A lot of Shire fans seem very happy with what they've produced so far in terms of pre-season, the players that they've brought in. Obviously, Shire, I'm not sure in terms of financial, but it looks like they've got backers now. They changed the club badge, obviously, to the 1880, which was talked about because it used to be the 1881 or whatever. So everything's positive at Shire. I'd love to see them push. I think, will they challenge? No, but I think top half, top six, I'd love to see them push for that. I still have reservations of whether they can do it just because of how good other clubs are. But yeah, I think they'll do better than, certainly do better than last year.
Yeah, I think so. I think they've made some improvements, but for me, I think they'll not be up the top, like as in
no
challenging, but I think they're going to be top half, more probably a similar kind of level to Broomhill, with something they can build on as well. And I think that's an important thing for some of these teams this year, is to get your ability to build on something for the following season or the year after. Next team then to look at, Galifreddine Rovers, Chris. A couple of signings there that catch my eye. Jake Canley coming in from Stenhouse Muir, good goalkeeper for them. He's young, but he's got some kind of good experience in the leagues. Kyle and Jamie Semple coming from Broomhill, and Nicky Reid coming in from Trenent. Solid signings for Galifreddine Rovers.
Gala are a funny one because they actually have improved over the last two seasons, but because of the increased numbers in the league, it's not really shown. They've always kind of been that sort of mid-table team, but they are improving. I think they could be a one to watch out for in terms of the results, in terms of how they play against the top-end teams, if you will. I think they've always kind of struggled a wee bit there in terms of they've been fine against the sort of bottom sides or teams kind of near their level in the league, but they usually do end up succumbing to some of the top teams, from what I've seen anyway. But if they can pull out a shock result here and there, I think they can push. And, Jimmy Scott's definitely a manager that seems keen to progress the club. And I've been impressed with their signings too. But, yeah, they're one of those that it's very difficult to judge until we see them in action in terms of until when the season starts, because I don't know. I've not actually looked at the run, so if they have an easier run, I think they could maybe push up the table. But it's going to be difficult. It's really difficult with these sort of mid teams whether they'll push. They either go one way or the other, or kind of stay where they are. So it's difficult.
a couple of teams left to look at. Cumbernauld Colts, Chris. For me, look like they might struggle this year.
Colts, I always feel every sort of season preview we do, I always kind of want Colts to do well. I think it's just maybe favouritism in that sense, because I really do like the Colts. I like David Proctor. But they've not really made huge changes. They've kept the same team from last year mainly, minus a few guys. And obviously, I think they brought in like legend Connor McLaren from Gene Field. David Churchill as well. I think he signed towards the end of last season. Churchill, I really got on with Churchill. So, but I'd love to see them push, but it's difficult. They've got a lot of really good young talents. Obviously, Cole McIntyre, we kind of hyped up a wee bit last season. Cameron Dixon. And then obviously we've got your leaders like Stephen O'Neill. I don't see them doing much, to be honest. I'd love to see them sort of push top half, but because of the strength and how strong it's got, the league, I mean, they just can't compete financially with some clubs, I think it's fair to say. So I think they'll probably be where they were last season, kind of towards the bottom half, hopefully pushing towards the top half.
Next two teams look at together, Hearts B and Celtic B, Chris. I think for me, Celtic B certainly weakened, I think, this year based on what we've seen from their squad and what they're there to put out. But again, they could be anything they could. And Hearts B, I think, very much the same. They'll maybe be a bit stronger, but I don't think they'll have put in maybe a bit more streetwise from the season they've had already in the lower league. But I don't think they'll be doing anything to write home about, personally.
I looked at the team lines for Hearts friendly. They were playing Broxburn, I think, and it wasn't totally changed from last year, but there were a couple of names missing. Whether that's for, you know, the opening day of the, or because they're playing Friday, obviously, or these guys have moved up, because I think a few of the young guys are actually getting a shot in the first team, or certainly on the fringes. It's going to be tough for Hearts. I think they might improve from last year, but not knowing if some of the younger guys are pushed up or maybe going out on loan, it's hard to really predict at this moment. Certainly, I feel Celtic B are weakened. Adam Brooks, I thought, was a cracking player. He's obviously moved on to Inverness Kelly. Rocco Vatta, I think's moved up to the first team. Ben Summers, I think's moved up to the first team, and then they've lost a few other guys to, you know, that have left the club or are being loaned out. So I think Celtic B are weaker, but a lot of people thought the same last year when they lost, obviously, like Owen Moffat. So I think it's tough to say. Celtic B obviously are... you're losing one really great player, you're probably getting another great player in, down the pipeline as well. So it's hard to say with Celtic B. Do I think they'll probably still be challenging, I would imagine.
Final team then to cover off is the Lone League new boys themselves, Linlithgow Rose, getting promoted from the East of Scotland Premier Division last season. We know they're capable of in terms of a squad. They have made not many additions. I think the one that stands out for me, Callum Ray, coming in from Stirling Uni, a very, very good player at 20 years old. He's more than capable. They brought in a lad from Jack Thompson from Heriot Watt and Sean McCurdy from Lothian Thistle Hutchinson Vale, which I personally don't know an awful lot about those guys, but last season they were a very strong squad, and if you had a player like Callum Ray in your squad, I think it'll give you just a little bit of extra edge.
Yeah, controversial, obviously, with Cal leaving Stirling Uni. He wasn't on his final year. Sean McCurdy's an interesting one because he's not played football for a few years. I actually had to message him because the thing about Hutchie Vale is that he played in a Scottish Cup game. He signed one, like a one-day contract to play in a Scottish Cup game for Lothian Thistle. He was previously at Kelty Hearts, and he's been focusing on his gym that he owns. And I had to message him recently because I was like, I don't remember you playing for Lothian Thistle, Sean. What's going on? And he's like, oh, I signed for one Cup game. I'm like, oh, that makes sense. But yeah, he's a good signing. But it'll be interesting to see how he does, obviously, having not played football in a wee while. The biggest loss to Linlithgow Rose is obviously Mark Stowe, which I'm really disappointed that he's left from a selfish point of view, but great move to Arbroath. They've got a really good player there. Dylan Patterson coming in from Bowness Athletic, I think it's a fantastic signing. Really good replacement. In terms of Linlithgow Rose, I saw an interview with Gordon Hird, obviously. Their expectation is to challenge this season. I think it's the type of club they are, Linlithgow, obviously having so much success in the East and former juniors and whatnot. I think it will be disappointing if they don't at least be that second or third team behind East Kilbride and Tranent. And if they can, I said last year we rated them so highly in terms of probably being one of the best East of Scotland teams. It's no shock to me if they go up to the Lone League and become a challenger. And I think they will, but I think it's going to be difficult against East Kilbride and Tranent.
Well, that's the roundup of the Lone League here on the official Catch Up podcast. It's great to be back. We'll be back with the coverage of the West of Scotland, the East of Scotland and the South of Scotland as they start their seasons next Saturday. Thanks again for listening or watching. Remember, hit the like, subscribe, do all that good stuff at Official Catch Up and all your good social media platforms too. So we'll be back next week, but until then, have a good one. Cheers.